What's going on, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Porto Podcast in English. This is episode number 2. I am your host, Rui dos Santos, and we got a great episode for you all. I am here with my good friend, Jason Regu, my co-host. How are you doing, man?
Doing great. How are we doing? That was a great victory over the weekend.
Great victory over the weekend. Great start to the season. You know, all the little the suspensions that we had with David Carmo and Otávio and, you know, a couple of missing pieces from last season, and we looked as good as ever. I'm really ecstatic for this season. You know, we got a lot of things to cover this on this episode. Obviously, we're going to touch up on the game against Marítimo. We're going to do a little, I guess, recap on it just ourselves, but we got quite a bit of Twitter questions to answer, and it's all pertaining the future of the season, how we did against Marítimo, and also formation stuff and whatnot. A lot of great questions, guys. We really appreciate your feedback and your input and everything. So let's jump right into it, Jason. Porto come out on top 5-1 against Marítimo. You know, we took over this game right from the beginning. A couple of slip-ups after we took a 1-0 lead, which could have resulted into us being tied up early on, but luckily we were to get out of those jams. But right after that, we just really took off and dominated the game completely. So what are your thoughts on this game?
I almost feel like those slip-ups almost came from Sergio Conceição telling the guys to get after it, to go for it, to be more attacking. I think that's kind of the risk you take, right? When you're playing more open, you're playing more forward, right? Both outside backs getting up and down the pitch, creating chances, they're involved in goals and the opportunities created. I think that kind of leaves you exposed at the back, right? And like we were talking prior to the podcast, maybe Pepe is Father Time is catching up to Pepe, and I think Marcano's not going to have a career as long as Pep, and he's not even the same caliber. So I think having the two older center backs kind of it leaves you exposed at the back, to say the least. I mean, you have your left back and right back up the pitch. If you're holding center midfielder's not there, which he's another one that's not a speed demon, so that's just going to leave you exposed for the counterattack, right? But at the same time, the risk was worth the reward, right? You have 5 goals to show for it. So
yeah,
it's a trade-off for sure. So I think that's where the slip-ups came from, was more them taking chances. And the risks you take is sometimes you're going to get exposed. And that's a part of the game.
Yeah, and sometimes the risks you take become very rewarding. And luckily, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, I mentioned, and you obviously touched up on it as well, about the little slip-ups in the beginning, Marcano displacing a ball, which could have led to a goal to Marítimo early on. But also, right before our second goal, I can't remember if it was before the goal that Ivan Nilsson scored that was called back. But, yeah, the fullbacks were left definitely exposed, and the center backs were there to clean up the mess. And there was a great ball whipped in from one of the wingers from Marítimo, and Pep completely mistimed his header, or he was out of position, and luckily Diogo Costa made an incredible save to keep the score 1-0. And, you know, had that not had happened, we could be looking at a different result at that time. And what I've really enjoyed to see about us is being resilient and responding immediately after that. We saw that we were shook from a mistake, and we just hit the ground running. We took advantage, and Porto just kept attacking, getting forward. And Ivan Nilsson got that goal that we desperately needed. Things were being a little bit shaky at the time, and being up 2-0 in a game like this, the first game of the season with a couple of players out, and it's a fresh season. We don't really know what to expect, and we were there. Ivan Nilsson gave us that second goal, that comfortable lead. And from there and on, it just seemed that we were unstoppable. Are there any key points or key takeaways that you saw in this game that you liked or disliked?
I mean, I really like it's this forward pairing. I like if we can manage to keep both of them and not lose any to the transfer window, I think we'll be in good shape this season. As long as they can stay healthy, I think they're going to score a lot of goals together, and they have the support, right? You have your left back, right back attacking. You have Namasu. You have Grujic, who's strong in the middle, doesn't make too many mistakes. And you have Pepe. You have Otávio to deliver the ball to them. I think we're going to be an attacking team this year. And then I think we're going to, Sergio's going to be okay with exposing the back at times. He can trust Diogo Costa. The kid continuously makes big saves, right? He still trusts Pepe. Pepe will be fine. It's going to see now we're going to replace Marcano, right? If Carmo steps in and he's that perfect pairing for Pepe, he's the young legs, he's going to win a lot of those tackles. I think we'll be all right. But I want to highlight the two forwards this season. It's been a bit since Porto can say they've had great strikers, and these two are very, very good for the Portuguese league.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And seeing those two just link up, and when we look at football nowadays, it's like, oh, there's a duo in strikers or a pairing up top. It's like, it's so rare to see a 4-4-2 or a pairing of two strikers together, but these two just link so well together. And, you know, like their strengths really just push away their weaknesses, or at least compensates their weaknesses. And it's incredible to watch with the link up play between the both of them. They're you know, assisting each other's goals. Taremi is an absolute monster, whether it's extending play or extending the link up and just putting the ball away into the back of the net. It's something that obviously, as you mentioned, we haven't seen in such a long time. And having just two lethal strikers that are able to finish the ball and able to anticipate and position themselves so well, it's such a gem. And I think it can compensate for our weaknesses on the other side of the pitch, whether if it's the center back or a reliable center midfielder that's good, you know, like filling in that Vitinha role. I think having two lethal strikers like that can really compensate it. You know, it's almost a guarantee, a goal from at least one of them every single week. So it's always good to have. Another thing that I saw in this game, and it's been a question going around a lot of Portistas, you hear about it on Twitter, a lot of complaints among the fullbacks last season. Okay. So obviously Zaidu and João Mário. People like João Mário because he's very attack minded. He's a natural winger, but he's not a natural fullback where he can track back and defend well. I felt like in this game, these two did really well. João Mário, obviously two assists, and Zaidu was absolutely fantastic. I think he played probably one of the better games, if not the best game, with Porto. He was great defensively, and he was getting forward, tracking back. His passing, his decision making, most importantly, was on point. What do you say about these two fullbacks?
I think they'll probably be his go-tos for the season, right? He likes reliable outside backs, and he knows what he gets out of them. And João Mário, you're always going to get offensive production out of the kid. He knows how to take people on. He can cross a beautiful ball. Yeah, he has the confidence, right? He's versatile. For his one-on-one defending, I don't mind it. He's not the strongest fullback, but he does win a lot of tackles. I think positionally, though, I think he's learning and he's picking up pretty quick. For Zaidu, defensively, he can make mistakes, but it's okay because he's very fast. He makes up for those mistakes. He has his cover with his own legs. I think he's getting better on the ball. I don't want to shoot the gun too early, but he tends to piss it away a ton, but I think he's getting better. He's making progress. Sergio Conceição loves the guy. He has a great attitude. His work ethic's ridiculous. He's up and down the field.
Yeah.
There's not really too much bad to say about the two. They're not the best outside backs we've had, but they're both very good.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, just to put this out there, I know there's a few people that are still quite skeptical on Zaidu, but he won every single one of his duels in this game. He contributed to the first goal, winning that interception that forced us to be on a counterattack on the final third, which led to a goal. I felt that in this game, he was much better. I know it's just Marítimo, so it's not saying that, you know, he's going to do this against Benfica or Sporting or Braga, et cetera, but I think it's a good sign. I think he had a positive game. I think defensively he did okay. And, you know, he didn't lose the ball as much and didn't make as many ridiculous decisions as we've seen in the past that frustrated us so much. So I think, you know, with some time, maybe these two fullbacks are going to be worth it and end up having a great season. I kind of see the potential, especially on João Mário's side. But Zaidu, maybe he's going to be the guy that's going to, you know, going into the season is the big question mark in that position, but I think he'll recover and have a good season. Hopefully that's how it plays out. So yeah, Jason, that pretty much covers that game. Any last comments or thoughts that you have regarding the game against Marítimo?
I don't think it's going to really tell the story of the season, right? We're just coming off a hot season, coming off big cup wins, two in a row, right? The Tasa and the Super Tasa. And when it's not like we're facing a complete powerhouse. Like, I watched the Sporting versus Braga game this weekend, and those were two very different sides than facing Marítimo, for sure. But it's a positive result. Let's take it. It's 3 points. We move on. Good stuff from Porto.
Yeah, and we're waiting to see the season debuts of David Carmo and Otavio. I think it's really going to shake things. I kind of like how the team started out the match, the formation. I think Sergio Conceição definitely deployed the best that he had available. And I think rather, for the most part, we did rather well. But I'm kind of excited to see how this team is going to line up this weekend. So I guess we can just jump right into the Twitter questions right now, because a lot of these questions are going to pertain towards the game. Brian Pereira at @bpereira_1022 asks, which past or current player would you say is a similar playing style to yourself? I like this question a lot.
So you going to answer this first, or is this for me?
Yeah, I can go first. Before, I don't want to toot my own horn, so I'm going to go with Diogo Costa, because I've been a goalkeeper my entire life. I don't want to say Vitor Bahia, because that guy is legendary. But Diogo Costa, man, he's a goalkeeper. What else can I say? So I'm going to go with him right now. That's the player that resembles me the most.
I'll probably say Costinha, right? I'm flashy, right? I'm a team player, defensive-minded. But
workaholic.
Workaholic, but at the same time, come up with a few clutch moments for the squad. And I think that basically wraps it up. I'm nothing special. I'm not your Taremi. I'm not your Falcão, your Hulk.
Yeah.
Basic player.
The guys that, you know, do all the dirty work that, you know, they play such a key role. You know, Costinha is a guy that I admired so much, not just at Porto, even on the national team. He did so well in the Euro 2004 and in the World Cup 2006. One of my favorite players ever, because he just worked so hard and was just a two-way player. I just love players like that go under the radar. Next question, ACM87 @FCP87. What's the deal with the Coletivo banner Conceição was waving at the end of the last match? So this is a difficult question. I didn't know the answer to. I had no idea. And thankfully, one of our friends, Pedro, his Twitter name is @PED365. He answered this for us, because I had no idea what it was. It was for the record of going 58 games unbeaten in the league from the Coletivo Ultras. So that is the reason why. So thank you, Pedro, for answering that. I would have been on the internet all day searching for the reason why. So we appreciate you doing that for us. Next question is from George @Porta19. Hey guys, congrats on the launch of the Porto podcast in English, and hope to hear you a lot more in the future. Do you guys have a local FC Porto community match routine? Do you watch the matches live? If so, alone or in rowdy groups at a bar or at home? Cheers. So I would love to get a nice local get together of all the local portistas. There's a lot of potential places that we could watch these games. There's a lot of Portuguese social clubs around our vicinity. So it would be a great thing to have. Maybe that's something we'll work on in the future, to get a group of portistas to watch the game together. But for the moment, at least for me, I only watch the game at home. What about you, Jason?
Yeah, same. I mean, growing up, I would go to all the clubs, right? Because we didn't have access to the channels unless it was on RTP. So we'd go to Phillip Street Hall in East Providence.
Yep.
And go watch it at the bar in the basement when I was like 8 years old until probably like 14, 15. And then once we had access to the games, I just watch it at home with my dad.
Yep. Yeah, same here. I used to go to a couple of the clubs here near my house, and that's where we would watch the games. It was so hard to get the channels, but now it's a lot easier. So I just watch the game at home. But that's a really good question. I think it's going to give us an idea on what to do in the long run. So, George, if something happens around here, we'll definitely let you know. Thank you for your question. So, next question is Andrew Arruda. You think Taremi could stay throughout the rest of the season, throughout the rest of his contract, or be sold next summer? Plus, I see Sergio Conceição using Marcano as our third CB. Do we sign one more, or are you okay with the four center backs we have? At least for me, I would love to get another center back, but I don't really know anyone else on the radar that we could get. Having him, who was okay at his prime with us, I thought he did an above average job, did really well, but he is getting older. And as you mentioned, he is no Pep. And we do have Fabio Cardoso alongside as the backup pairing. So I think we're okay with that. And luckily that we signed David Carmo, who looks to be a really good player and had a really good season last year. So am I comfortable with it? I think we could have better, but I don't think it is the worst. What say you, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, I think for this season, it's fine. I don't think there's too much to worry about. It's looking forward. What's their plan? Who's their prospects? What do they want to do? Because next year could be a complete recycle refresh. Because who knows? Maybe David Carmo has a standout season and we already lose him next season. And then look, we're looking for three new center backs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for the time being, it's fine.
Yeah.
But we'll see next season. We'll revisit this.
Yeah. And to answer the first part of the question about Taremi staying throughout the rest of his contract, you know, I can kind of see it. If not, he has to be sold next summer because his contract expires in 2024. And obviously we want to make some sort of money, but he is 30. He's going to be 31 next year. And how much are you really going to get for a guy that's never really proven himself outside of the Portuguese league? He doesn't really have any experience or quality seasons in the Spanish league, the English league, etc. So it'd be hard to get quite a bit of money for him. So at the end of the day, he did cost about, I believe it was like 5 or 6 million. I wouldn't mind seeing him ride out the rest of his contract. And if he decides to stay, great. If not, I can definitely take him for another 2 years and give us the numbers that he's been giving.
Yeah, I mean, you make a fair point. He's getting older, right? Especially for his position. But maybe the guy does want to play at like a different club, different country. Who knows? We'll see.
Yep.
But I mean, he'd be suitable for anywhere in like Italy. I don't see him going to France or Spain. Probably Italy or Spain. He could find a new home at a high level, right? Still playing at least Europa League or something. But I mean, you make a fair point. Maybe it's a low fee and then just let him write out the contract. And he loves Porto, the city. We won't know until the end, but I don't know.
Yes.
That's something to ponder upon.
So Andrew also asks, it's only been 1 week, but do we think the league is a two-headed race with Porto and Benfica? Or do you not put too much stock in Sporting's poor defensive performance? 3 goals in a league game. Porto never allowed more than 2 all of last year in the league. What say you about that?
I don't put much stock into that. I mean, I wouldn't rate, even if Sporting had a good defense last year, I still wouldn't rate their defense. Maybe they just had good games, luckily, but they were a counter-attacking side for sure. And they have the young guns who just counterattack and they get the goals. And they won a lot of games last year, last minute. And I can see them doing it again this season. They have a lot of youth, a lot of heart, and a good coach. I think they'll be competing for a bit. Maybe not the last month of the season, but I think it'll be the 3 teams at least. And maybe even Braga early on too. Hopefully they don't slip up early. And we have 4 teams competing for that first spot, at least for half a season, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, since Ruben Amorim took over Sporting, they've been defensively sound. You know, 2 years ago, they had one of the best defenses in the league that we can remember. And last year, they were pretty good defensively as well. So this is just one of these hiccup games. They still have the majority of their defense and the majority of the players from last year. They definitely went out and got some talent so they can compete. So I'm not going to write them off right now. I think it was just a hiccup game. And you know what? At the end of the day, it's a draw. And you're drawing against Braga. And yeah. If you were to look into a season where, hey, we're going to drop points to Braga, but we're going to draw to them, it's not the end of the world. Because Braga, any year, they are more than capable of drawing or even upsetting us. They upset us last year. They ended our streak last year. So they're capable of it. So it's a good quality team. They're not as good as the top three, but they are definitely capable of making the lives of the big three teams in Portugal difficult. So it's not over yet. Absolutely not. I think Sporting are good. And I think on paper, they're still better than Benfica. So that's my opinion. So yeah. Don't write off on them. I think they're still a good team.
I mean, every time you go to play Braga, you never write them off. You're always looking at that game. That's never a win in your head when you go into the weekend. You're never confident about that game. They can always upset any of the big three, right? And they play great football. And they have attackers who are hungry and they're ready to finish. They put opportunities away. I mean, I watched the full game and it was back and forth. And the level of quality was pretty high.
Yeah.
And Braga's, they know how to play football and they scored some nice goals. Like, it's just hats off to Braga and hats off to Sporting in that game. It was two good teams getting after it.
Yeah, and you know, just another friendly reminder, going into last year where we could have won or went 59 games unbeaten, I was nervous in that game because I knew Braga, just when they're hungry, they can play. When they show up, they can play, and they did just that, and they ended our streak. So hats off to them. They are a good quality team, so let's not write off Sporting yet. Next question, Miguel at Migas. _FCP, what are the top three worst signings you think Porto have ever made in terms of money and quality of player? This one is so interesting. Jason, what do you think?
I think Oliver Torres has to be up there.
Yep, that's who I have.
I think any signing that Lopetegui made / loan, except for Casemiro, I think could be argued for that.
Yeah, I mean, Oliver Torres wasn't the worst player that played for us, especially in his first, what was it, two loans that he came to us. He did well in his first tenure with us. But then when we actually signed him in 2017 and Sergio Conceição took over, this guy just... We spent 20 million for what, you know?
Exactly.
He's not the worst player that played for us. It's just overall disappointment that we paid 20 million and he didn't produce.
It's the price tag, right? There's big expectations with that price tag. If they're going to spend 20 million on you, you're going to be expected to be sold for like 50 plus. You know what I mean? And exactly. He just didn't bring those performances for the price tag that he came with. And listen, the football at the guy's feet was phenomenal, but some games you wouldn't even know he was on the pitch because he wasn't getting the ball not enough, or he was just getting knocked around and he just shut off.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. I have like five players that I put down. Oliver Torres is one of them. I mentioned Diego Reyes and Adrian Lopez.
Yep.
Diego Reyes was supposed to be this guy that was really projected. I don't think he was a golden boy, but he was projected to be a top notch player. And he stuck around the team for a while, but he just never produced, never really made his way consistently on the first team. And we spent quite a bit of money at the time. I think it was 2013. He was 20 years old. And we spent 7 million on a player from Mexico. You know, that's a lot of money at the time, and it just never paid off. He just ended up leaving on a free. And in the same story with Adrian Lopez, we got him from Atletico Madrid. There was so much hype around him, and he just never found a way, never really scored any big goals. The only big goal that I can remember from him is when he scored against Roma in the Champions League to pull one back in the first leg, and that's about it. We spent about 12 million on him.
Mm. I think, like I said, it's just a ton of players for me that came from Lopetegui. Like, even Christian Teu, like, just having him on loan just didn't sit right with me. Like, the kid was full of skill, but just did nothing productive in games, right? Just, he would score a goal here and then be turned it off for five games. There's just a lot of disappointing people under him, for sure, especially for the money that we spent. It was like the first time in a while, like, we had all these previous coaches we didn't open the checkbook for, and then here comes Lopetegui, and we just open the checkbook, and here comes financial disaster because none of them had an ROI.
Yeah, and it's crazy. He never really had a coaching resume outside of international coaching, like the youth and everything. He never coached a real club before, and we just decided to give him a blank check. Here, you name your players, and we'll just go and get them. It's just, it was a very bizarre scenario, and we definitely paid the price. We ended up being an FFP mostly because of that. So yeah, those are three-ish, four players that we named as the three top worst players that Porto have ever signed. Matthew de Jesus at Matthew_FC Porto. What would be your ideal starting lineup and ideal subs to be made in a big game when everyone is fit?
I think it's similar to the lineup they had this weekend, right? You replace Marcano for Carnamu, and then this is where it gets tough, right? To me, I'd put Pepe at right back and then Otavio right wing, just to get Otavio in the game and Pepe, keep him on the field because you just need his presence.
Wow, really? So yeah. Like, João Mário is just like right in the bench?
Just not for the full game, just to start.
For
the big game.
Figuring out like this formation and the players that we're going to use is going to be really tricky. So the first like four, maybe five games of the season, Sergio Conceição, usually he just deploys mostly the same starting 11 every single game. But I think we're going to see a lot of mix up in formation and players starting, because for me, I have Diogo Costa, João Mário, David Carmo, Pep, and Zaidu in the back. Then I have Otavio, Uribe, Grujic, Pep along the midfield, and then Taremi and Ivan Nilsson up top, like a 4-4-2.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, it's just, I don't see João Mário not being in the game, and Pep replacing him. I think, I don't know. It's really hard, because if he lines up the way that he did last game, where we have a number 10 and like a midfield of three,
yeah,
it changes everything. Yeah. So I don't know.
I think it depends on the opposition, right? If you're going to England to play Liverpool, like, I probably want João Mário at the right back, right? But if we're going to, for say, going to Italy to play Juventus, I wouldn't mind Pep at right back. It just depends who we're playing. Depends.
No, I get against Juventus, we could put Porto B and we'll slap them. That team is finished. Juventus is finished. but super sub options, man. Tony Martinez just proves once again that guy is the best backup striker in the world. That guy's amazing. I just love how simple he is, and he's just a poacher, and he's great in the air, and he'll just get you that goal. He comes right off the bench, bangs in that goal with the head, and it was sublime. Love a player like that can come in and produce. Gabriel Veron, didn't see too much of him, only just 10 minutes, but you know that kid's supposed to have a lot of potential. Bruno Costa can come in and play basically anywhere. You know, I don't know. What other subs do you like?
I like Estacio and Galeno to add in there too. I think we have some depth this year, to say the least.
I think so too. All right. So next question comes from Afonso at Afonso_Corch. What would you think about a midfield with Uribe, Otavio, and Pep? I think it would be solid, as Otavio is probably the player in the squad who is more similar to Vitinha. So I don't know. What do you think, Jason?
I just think they're just different, right?
I think it's just there's two natural wingers being thrown in a midfield.
Yeah.
And I feel like we just need a more defensive presence to pair with, to pair with Uribe, or someone that can just hold the ball like Vitinha was capable of. And I think Otavio is capable of it, but I think he's just so important more on the outside. I guess it would all depend. It would all depend on what formation we're going to stick with throughout the season. If we're going to have like a three, midfield, then maybe, and then have three up top with Ivan Nielsen and Taremi, and then a number 10 behind them. It just all depends. So it's a hard question. I don't disagree with it. I kind of agree with what Afonso's trying to say, but I guess it just all depends.
Yeah, I definitely don't disagree with it. I think there's going to be a lot of situational formations this season, depending on the team, depending on what's going on in the game. But for that to be as like reliable go-to, I don't think it's going to be his go-to. You know what I mean? But it'll be situational. There may be cases where it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll have to wait and see, and maybe in the end, Afonso will be right. So we'll have to wait and see. I think I really believe that after four or five games is really where we're going to – it's going to dictate the trajectory of our season and how we're going to line up. So let's wait and see, and we're going to hold on to that and see what happens. Our friend Mitchell, all the way down from Australia, at Tripeiro Nation. How should the team set up when Otavio returns? Pep's been operating quite well in the Otavio role. Do we see Pep move into the front three with Taremi and Ivan Nielsen, and Otavio move into the midfield? Also, should Grujic be starting?
Yeah, I think Pep moves into that role for sure. I think that's why they bought him, to be honest, initially.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Grujic deserves to start. I think he's a Sergio Conceição guy, right? He plays hard, plays with heart, and he just wants to win. He gets after, gets stuck into the tackles, and he just makes simple passes. At the end of the day, Who would you put over him?
Yeah, and it's, you know, not having Vitinha there, and that's what I meant about having a guy that can pair with Uribe. I feel like Grujic, his presence, his intelligence, his experience, his maturity, and most of all, his size can really, it's hard to just pass on. You know, he's 6'4", can win nearly any aerial duel. He's pretty good with the ball on his feet. He's pretty intelligent. So not to say that he is like a Vitinha type player where he can dictate the tempo and control the game in the midfield, but he's more like a Matic, you know, just a big guy that is pretty good on the ball, can contribute defensively, and, you know, just does simple things. So I can't see another reason why he shouldn't start for right now. That's why I think Sergio Conceição will deploy a 4-4-2 and have both Pep and Otavio on the outside. So I guess, once again, it goes to the last question and what we were previously talking about. It depends what formation. So maybe we'll see Otavio move into the midfield and then Pep move into the number 10 or to the front three with Taremi and Ivan Nielsen. So we'll have to wait and see. Next question is from the Portugal corner at João_wonder. Based on a percentage, how confident are you Porto will win the league? And also, who is your most hated Benfica player of all time?
I would never say I go into the year confident that Porto is going to win the league, to be honest. I hate that attitude. It's kind of a cocky, arrogant attitude. But I'm rooting for them each and every week. And do I think our chances are strong or like high likelihood of us winning the league? For sure, but it's never guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
For hated player, I think you can go first, Rui. I don't know.
Yeah, I want to say Jonas, okay? And I'm not going to take away on how good he was. He was good. He scored a lot of goals. He won titles. But that dude was compared to Jardel. And he wouldn't even be licking the Portuguese league if he was playing in the era with Jardel. He wouldn't even be on Porto. So, and for him, his track record against Sporting and Porto is abysmal. For whatever reason, that guy never showed up in those games. He would show up in every single game, but he would end up on the bench against Sporting or Porto, and he's only scored 2 goals against them both. So he stat padded a lot against the smaller teams. So, and Benfica fans always tried saying that he was as good as Jardel or even better than Jardel. the best foreign player that played in Portugal or whatever, or the best Brazilian that ever played in Portugal. No, not a chance. Mário Jardel's a million times better. And Jonas, I never liked him. Great player, scored a lot of goals, won trophies. I respect that, but I couldn't stand him at all because he never showed up against us and he never really played against us. So it's just, how can you say that he was better than Jardel? So that's the number one. That's the thing for me on him. So, Jason, so you don't have anyone at all that you dislike?
I hated playing against Cardoso, to be honest.
Yeah.
I didn't like seeing that guy on the pitch.
Yeah, I didn't either, but I mean, he did pretty well for them.
He's a big boy, always got the ball, tough to take it off of, and when that guy took a shot, the guy had a cannon.
Yeah, he did. He definitely did. So, all right, Jason, I think that just does it for this week's episode. We got our second episode out of the way, man. This is episode number George Costa, and we're just we're moving on to the next one. You know, I hope everyone here enjoyed the show. I enjoyed recording this once again. You know, it's a breath of fresh air just to talk all things Porto, and you know, obviously chopping it up with you, Jason. Your knowledge on football is really good, and I just love interacting with all these people with all these Twitter questions, just really keeping the show going. And that's what it's all about on my end. What about you?
Yeah, I would say the same. And you referring to George Costa episode, could you argue he's one of the most hated Portistas of all time behind Pinta Costa from outside the club?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
That's a guy, dude, you want in your club, but you never want to play against. That's a warrior right there.
Oh man, that guy, Bishu, man, that's what he was. Real. Hardworking guy, man. And
leader, captain, knew how to win.
Man. That guy left everything on the pitch. And
absolutely.
You know, I wish there were more players like that today. So, Jason, that wraps it all up for episode number 2. I hope you all enjoyed this episode as much as Jason and I have. We are almost on iTunes. Hopefully we get it on later on in the week. So guys, we are basically on every other platform. So subscribe and leave a review if you wish on all these platforms and share to your friends and everyone. And that will help us grow. So thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.